This is Erin.
And this is Jessica.
And this is episode 3 of the Double Knit Podcast.
Erin had something that she hasn't shared yet with our podcast listeners that has sort of been affecting her knitting.
Yeah, we talked about this last episode that I was tired and losing my knitting mojo, and it's because I'm pregnant.
Yay! Knitting, yay!
So I just am about done with my first trimester, and the knitting mojo is back.
Feeling human again.
Feeling great. And the way that is manifesting itself in my knitting is that I'm committing project adultery. I was a really monogamous knitter. Like, I'd do like one, maybe two projects at a time, and maybe one for the shop.
And then mock me because I was doing multiple projects at one time.
Yeah. So now I have like 4 projects and 2 for the shop.
Oh, yeah.
So I have 6 total, which is insane for me.
Yeah.
So, but I'll let you talk about your knitting first.
Oh, okay. Well, I've been going a little nutty lately. The big story for my knitting is the Auburn Camp shirt, which we've discussed before. I went to TNNA this last week, and it was the only knitting I took with me. I just decided I would get some really focused time to work on it, and that was great. I managed to knit, I probably got about 8 inches of the back done. And when I left, I had maybe 1/2 inch done, so I've gotten a lot done, but it was like a joke. Every time I'd pull my knitting out, everyone would go, "Oh my God, what are you working on? How big are those needles? Is that lace weight? What are you, crazy?" And like, everyone was going nuts, so I was all excited when I got to Chrissy Gardner's booth, because she's the designer of the project, and I'm like, "I want to show you what I'm doing," and I started to pull it out of my bag, and she kind of held her hands up like, "Don't come any closer," and said, "I never want to knit that sweater again." And I thought, you'd be the one person who would understand why I'm knitting this. But it turns out she had to do the sweater and the same pair of socks that were in the same issue of Interweave with a 2-week deadline. And she's got 2 little kids. I don't know how she did that. But I guess she said she went on vacation and handed the kids off to somebody else and just spent the whole time knitting, working on those projects. But so the Auburn Camp shirt, I'm feeling very good about that. Even though everyone said I was crazy, they all admitted it's very pretty and it looks very nice. Other things I'm doing, I've been doing a lot of little silly things. Like, I started to crochet a lobster. I don't know why. I found this little amigurumi and it's just random. But so then I started crocheting a lobster, and then I was looking. I think what happened was a customer came in the store and said she had knit a lobster. So I was looking for the knitted lobster, and I found the crocheted lobster. So I started the crocheted lobster, but then I also looked at the knitted lobster, and the knitted lobster is a lot more lobstery. It's like an anatomically correct lobster, whereas the crocheted one is just sort of an amigurumi, like vaguely lobster-shaped red thing. Mm-hmm. But the knitted one is the woman who wrote the pattern's a Mainer, and she takes her lobster seriously. So... So I started knitting one too. Those are both like half done, lying around the house. And then I also just did a little Afghan square for a friend. A group of people are putting together an Afghan for a friend who's going through a bad period. So I was able to take some yarn I was given as a sample at TNNA, which was from Sheep Shop Yarn. It's the Sheep 2, I believe. I get confused. Their yarns are called 1, 2, and 3. So I think it's Sheep 2. And I'm doing I just finished it last night, a little wavy dishcloth pattern, and calling that an Afghan square. And then I started RPM socks because I bought the new crayon sock colors came into the shop, and I wanted to make sure I bought the color that I liked this time, because last time I was like, oh, I'll get it later. And then they were all discontinued, and I never got the color I wanted. So I started RPM, and I've only done like 1.5 inches of the ribbing, but then the new Nitty came out 2 days ago, and there's this new sock pattern that uses the crayon sock called Ziggy.
And it's
super cute. And it's in the colorway that I really wanted that I never got, the 188. But now I'm like frozen. Like, do I rip out what I've done and do the Ziggy, or do I just keep going and do the RPM? I think I might rip it out and do the Ziggy because it's really cute.
I think
cute.
You should.
Yeah.
I support you in that.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. I think that's everything I'm working on right now. I don't think I mentioned before, I'm doing the hemlock for shop knitting. I'm doing a hemlock ring blanket in eco wool, which I'm almost done with the first skein. It seems like that first skein is taking forever, but it's probably because I knit on it for like 15 minutes a week. But yeah. So that's what I'm doing for my knitting. And you?
Okay. I'm knitting two things for the shop. I'm knitting a woolen collectibles pattern called Melisande that's in cotton fleece, and it has to be steeked, and it's my first steeking. So
steeking.
Yeah. It'll be exciting, but I brought it home to steek it and then forgot to steek it before I went back to work yesterday.
Oh, okay.
So then I started a really cute little boy's vest that has a robot on the front and stripes on the back. And I got the back done last night.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In one day.
In one day. Gotta love those little tiny baby projects.
Yeah. It's super cute so far.
And that's from Heirloom Stitches.
Yeah. And it's called Metal Man because of the robot on the front.
Yes.
So it'll be my first intarsia. First intarsia for one project, first steeking for another project.
Cool.
It's all kind of firsts.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's fun. It's nice to do, like, to learn something new on such a small scale, too. The,
exactly.
That intarsia, it's like you're not starting, like, some Sasha Kagan huge giant cardigan with roses all over it or
yeah.
something. Just that one little robot.
And I think that'll be enough.
I think so, too, yeah. I've done, I think, one intarsia project, and that was years ago when I did the punk rock backpack from Stitch and Bitch.
Oh, that, like,
I
the Hello Kitty.
I did with a Hello Kitty on it, yeah. And I think that may be my first and last intarsia. I might have done some other intarsia on something. I felt it, but... Oh, no, it's that bag, that Nikki Epstein bag.
The flowered one?
Yeah, the flowered tote one that I've had, like, 6 inches done of for about 4 years and haven't touched it. And Molly keeps going, like, you're never going to do that. You should just rip it out. And every time she says it, I'm like, I am too going to do that. And then I look at it, and I'm like, nah, I don't feel like working on that right now. I'll do something else. But I refuse to tear it out. I'm just like, I have all the yard. It looks really cute.
And well, I've seen a finished one.
I've
seen a
couple.
The lady came into the store
yeah.
with it. It was beautiful.
Yeah, we have. I've seen a couple in the wild, so I do like it.
I support you in finishing that, too, because I want to see what a brand new one is.
I have to
like.
Find the magazine again and
yeah.
get the pattern in. Yeah, okay.
Well. Okay. So, and then I'm working on the woodland shawl. I'm on the second half, and I only take that to knitting on Monday.
Okay.
So. I have almost a foot of it done.
Yeah, that's good.
I think I get a few inches done every week.
Cool.
It's really easy pattern to memorize. Although, I still have issues with calling it a shawl, because
it's not, a rectangle.
It's a rectangle. Should be a stole. Lady Eleanor is about halfway done, and then I hit the block with winding the ball again. So...
Oh, you're ready for a new ball?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, you were saying also that you've been dragging your heels on that a little bit because you're not in love with the yarn.
Yeah.
Which
it's wool in the woods, and it's like this, it's 100% wool, but it's kind of stretchy and splitty, and it smells kind of weird. So
fun. I can see why you love working with it.
But my mom picked it out, and it's for her for Christmas, so I'll finish it.
Yeah.
And it's like halfway done. When I do wind a ball... I try and do 2 repeats of the squares each time I sit down, like a day or every other day.
That's
so it goes
good.
Pretty fast once I actually sit down and do it. But yeah, I'm not really crazy about the yarn.
It's like that's an important lesson, I think, sometimes that we feel like we have to, you know, maybe there's yarn in your stash that you realize you're not that crazy about, but you sort of feel like you have to use it. And that when you are stuck with working with a yarn that you don't love, it feels like work. I mean, it's not...
Yeah, it
takes a little
does.
Of the joy out of the knitting, whereas when you work on a project where you're, like, madly in love with the yarn, those projects just
by. Yeah.
So, something to think about.
And then Forbes Forest, which is for my brother for Christmas.
From the Scarf Style book.
From Scarf Style. And that's in some Knit Picks.
Something.
Merino.
Merino.
It's in a green.
Merino
like the
style,
moss color.
Maybe?
Merino style.
Oh, there you go.
Because I bought it originally for the puff sleeve feminine cardigan and then realized that I would want to do it in a little bit finer yarn, maybe, and then just change the sizing on it. But it's working up really beautiful in the Forbes Forest.
Great.
And that's about a fifth of the way done. And then I started Pomatomus, and I'm halfway through the first chart repeat. And the yarn, it seems my fingers blue.
Oh, right, yeah.
Which is Bloom and Fiber Arts in a spinel colorway. And it's really, really pretty, but just the dyeing my fingers, I'm meh.
Yeah.
I'll get it done.
Yeah.
But right now I've been mostly working on the Forbes Forest.
Okay.
Because I don't have to look at the charts anymore. Let's see. Oh, I finished 2 projects.
Yeah.
I finished my first baby sweater.
Yay.
And that's the JoJo Crewneck sweater from Natural Knits for Babies and Moms. And I knit it in Cashsoft DK in like a cream. And I think it's called Glacier Blue or something.
Like a minty blue.
It's a minty blue. And it's stripes. And I had some vintage buttons that are glass that look really cute for the shoulder closure. And I finished my clapotee. And I can't remember if I had finished it last time.
I don't think so.
Okay. But it's beautiful. And I love it. And the picture on Ravelry and the one I put on my blog are a lot grayer because it's such a dark color. Mm. It's really hard to get all the...
Yeah, hard to photograph.
Definitions, the color definition just right. That's what I've been working on. It's a lot. Excellent. Strange for me.
Yeah, well, it happens.
Yeah, knitting adultery. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. I can't stand working on just... Well, I don't know. I go around and around with it. Sometimes I don't want to work on just one thing. Sometimes I want to work on just... one thing, well, like taking just one project with me to TNNA, like to get some focus time and to really feel like you're accomplishing something. Because I think I fall somewhere in the middle. Because there's some people I know who really work on multiple projects, and they knit. You see them at knitting night. They'll like pull something out. They'll knit two rows on one thing, and then they'll put it away. They'll pull something else out. They'll knit two rows on that. They put it, and they do that all night. And it's like at the end of the night, they've got no progress to show for it.
Yeah.
And that for me is discouraging. I want to be able to.
Me too.
See some progress, but on the other hand, I don't want to have like just the one thing I'm working on because maybe you're not always in the mood to concentrate on lace, or if you've got a really simple project, sometimes you want something a little more engaging than just plain stockinette or ribbing or whatever it is. So I like to have all different things in play. Like I usually like to have a sock in play and a lace project and a sweater project going.
Well, Jessica went to TNNA last weekend in Columbus.
I did.
So do you want to talk about that?
I do. I was trying to think. When I went to TNNA in January, I came home and I had a really strong sense of where the industry was going, what was happening, what the themes were. Like, it was very clear. This show, I really didn't see that, especially on the yarn side of things. And I kept talking to everybody, or people would say that all the time, like, what are you seeing? What do you think's happening here? And on the yarn side, I really didn't see any strong general trends. One thing I will say that I noticed is a rise. I think, like, alpaca was really huge a few years ago, and it was sort of new a few years ago, and now it's old hat. Now everybody has alpaca, just like back in January, everyone had bamboo was new to everyone, and now everyone has at least one, if not seven, bamboo yarns. And so now I was noticing more of the really high-end luxury fibers. Multiple vendors with Kiviet, which is the Arctic muskox, and I think probably one of the most expensive fibers you'll find, and one of the warmest. Multiple vendors who are selling yak yarns.
Like the Choquet.
Choquet is coming out in a DK weight now. The current version is a heavy worsted, but multiple vendors coming out with yak, or vendors who just focus on yak. Multiple vendors. Bison used to just be Buffalo Gold, and now there's multiple bison companies out there. I even saw one vendor who had a Wanako yarn, which Wanako is the more ancient ancestor to the llama and alpaca.
They're smaller, right?
Yes, and it's one of the most expensive fibers in the world. The vicuna is more expensive because vicuna cannot be domesticated. They can't be raised on a ranch. They actually have to be culled in the wild, clipped and released, and they just have one little patch of hair. Or seriously, it's this one little patch on their chest that is this lighter colored fiber, and they just shave that off like every 2 years, and it's wild animals that they're gathering the fiber from. Wanako is not quite that extreme, but I don't know anyone who's gonna be running out and buying Wanako yarn. I didn't order any for the shop. One really cool new yarn, though, that I saw that kind of follows in multiple trends. Louette has a new yarn out. I think when I saw the sample, they didn't even have a name on it, and they don't have all the colors out. It is 70% bamboo, 15% cashmere, 15% bison.
I want it.
I know. it's phenomenal. It has all of this beautiful color, and so they dye the bamboo, and I think they leave the down fibers undyed, so it has this really rich, shiny, luminous color on the bamboo, And then this halo of like brownish kind of muted from the down fibers. It, and I think it's a lace weight. It's like 350 yards for 50 grams. Kind of a heavy lace weight, I think. It's going to be super expensive. I think it's going to retail for about $50 a skein. And they didn't even have all the colors yet. They had like just a few skeins of it that you could touch and see a sense of the colors. And the colors are all really rich, saturated color on the bamboo. And then this beautiful kind of fuzz around it. So that was one new yarn that I was really excited about. But I didn't see a lot that was new. I saw a lot of booths where it felt to me like people were sort of chasing the Malabrigo trend. Like suddenly everyone has a yarn from Uruguay. Everyone has something that's kettle dyed. Or rather, and then, or some people point out, like chasing the Malabrigo trend, which was sort of chasing the Manos trend. So a lot of really similar yarns out. Also still this push toward eco where more people are promoting organic yarns or naturally dyed or organic that's naturally dyed. Although that's proven to be a problem for the bigger vendors like Lorna's and Owl both had announced previously that they were coming out with these naturally dyed lines and then they've both had some real production problems with it. In Lorna's case where they felt like the amount of water that they were using to produce the yarns was not environmentally friendly, and Owl I know has had a lot of consistency issues, so these are all kind of still waiting, or at least the Owl one is still waiting to come out. I'm not sure where Lorna's is with theirs right now. And then in terms of styles and patterns that are coming out, the fashion show, we were all joking, like after the fashion show, everyone needed to like go home and knit 6 car coats because there was like car coat after car coat after car coat in the fashion show. We're also saying that maybe this is an attempt on the part of yarn companies to get people to buy more yarn that, you know, you don't need to knit a sweater. You need to knit something that goes all the way down to your knees.
Yeah.
And a lot of sort of swing A-line style. So in the coats and in the sweaters, this style of a yoke that's a little more fitted and detailed, you know, the kind of patterns that have, like, say, like a really heavily cabled yoke or a textured yoke or a lace
and
yoke
and
then
the
sort
bottom.
Of swingy on the bottom. And then going along with that, it seemed like every garment in the fashion show was either alpaca silk or alpaca silk. And that, you know, really worked with that whole drapiness of that A-line and made everything really swingy and swishing. But that was sort of the only real thing
I
noticed.
I think last fall we kind of started seeing that because the Drops 103-1 jacket is kind of, it's asymmetrical mm-hmm. and a little bit A-line. And then I think in the winter issue of Interweave Knits, there was that rosemary coat that was purple
mm-hmm.
that was kind of swingy A-line too.
So. And then there was that, I don't even know the origin of the sweater, there was the pattern that had the cables that ran horizontally across the yoke, and then there was a million patterns that followed out, and then on the bottom, sort of an A-line style, but with more cables running then vertically. There was, I can't even remember where it came from, but then Lion Brand came out with a version of the pattern, and then there were a lot of things, even like the Debbie Bliss anniversary sweater that was in, what's it called, Bell or Silver Bell or something like that, that was in the anniversary issue of Vogue Knitting, seems sort of that style, and so there's still a lot of that going into fall.
That'll be good for me, though, because it'll accommodate my growing...
That's true.
The growing baby.
Excellent for maternity.
Yeah. Oh, so do you want to talk about what happened with Malabrigo?
I would, yeah. So Malabrigo was at the show. Some of you probably know from Ravelry that they had a fire at their mill.
Horror.
Yes. Very bad for the Malabrigo. I mean, as if the Malabrigo junkies out there weren't already, like, you know, constantly trying to get their hands on more yarn. So I spoke with both the gentlemen there, Tobias, and so they will not have new yarn coming out of their mill for 6 to 8 months.
Get it while you can.
Get it while you can.
Hoard it.
They have, fortunately, they had just set up within the last few months a new distribution center in the U.S. It's in the middle of nowhere in northern Michigan, like way northern Michigan. And that there is yarn at that distribution center. So what they were doing with the shops at this show was you could write an order and say, these are the things that I want. And they would say, okay. And they would put it in with all their orders. And when they were finally back in production in 6 to 8 months, you would get that order. Or you could submit your order and say, these are the things that I want. And they would send it to the distribution center in Michigan. and they would pick what they had that matched your order. And if you wanted Va and they were out of Va, they would pick another green. Mm. You know, something similar but not the same thing. So a lot of shops might still be, we'll be getting, like at our shop, I kind of split my order. They said there was no lace weight available at this point. So my lace weight order is in, and in 6 to 8 months, hopefully I'll get my lace weight. Aaron's eyes are just huge looking at me right now. That's right, 6 to 8 months.
That's past Christmas deadline,
folks. I know, that's way past. That's, yeah, plan ahead. But the worsted and the chunky, I just went ahead and said, this is what we're interested in. And then they're just going to send me close to what they have. And that also, everyone was looking for their sock yarn that they, because they had sort of started talking on Ravelry about the fact that they're developing a superwash sock yarn, and everybody wanted to see it. And that production has also been pushed back, where they're saying, you know, 6, 8 months, a year, it's way, way on the back burner now. They're just trying to get their production back in line. But they had two skeins that kept, everyone who came to the booth was like, the sock yarn, and they'd pull out these two red skeins that were all smoky smelling. And
it all, you know, died in the fire.
It did. Sorry, it folks. Did all die in the fire. So it looks like it'll be really nice. There, you know, if you saw it on a shelf, you wouldn't say, oh, that's Malabrigo. So there's nothing, you know, I felt like it looks nice, and it's definitely something I'd like to get in.
Does it match the existing aesthetic, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's not that. It's just, it's another hand-dyed sock yarn. It didn't have anything. Of course, I was only looking at two skeins that survived a fire, so maybe if I saw the whole line, I'd have a different opinion about it. But it didn't, you know, it's not the sort of thing where from across the room you would say, oh, that's such and such. From across the room, you're like, oh, maybe that's Blue Moon, or maybe it's Koigu, or maybe it's, you know, it could be any number of yarns from a distance. It doesn't have a really distinctive look. Although I think maybe, again, if I see them all together, maybe the color palette will be more distinctive once it's developed. But yeah, so still looking forward to that. But that's going to be much further off now than we had hoped.
So sad.
It is. Something else I wanted to talk about, though, were the books. There are like a million new books coming out.
Awesome.
And I got a lot of them, unfortunately, were just little mock-ups where you get a picture of the cover and a few sample pages of it. I think the big ones that people were, one that people are really excited about that's coming out any minute now is Eclectic Soul by Janelle Laidman. And I think a lot of people know about it from The Yarn Harlot because there's a Rivendell sock that I think was part of some sort of sock club that you could only get as through the club, and that will be in the book. And the book is billed as like socks for the adventurous knitter, and they're mostly fairly complex cabled twisted stitch texture patterns and fairly complex
construction
color patterns.
Oh, color.
The construction
is the same. It's not anything weird like Cat 40 does.
I don't remember. I didn't, you know, I really only got a chance to glance at it. I didn't get to get a keeper copy of the book. So yeah. I just sort of looked at it for a little while. And I don't remember with that. And I think what I find challenging with these patterns is that it's not like something like, say, Pomatomus, which has a regular repeating pattern. There's no regular repeat to it. Like every row is different. A cable might meander up the leg and then twist and turn and go somewhere else. And so it's not necessarily symmetrical, and it's not repeated row after row after row. There's sort of a more of a whole picture to each sock, you know, where a cable kind of does something, you know, it's, the whole thing is the repeat. And other books that I think people are going to be really interested in coming up this fall, Stephanie Jappell has a new book coming out called Glam Knits.
Yeah, I'm going to take a look at that.
That looks very pretty. I only got to see a couple of sample things from that. Wendy Bernard of Knit and Tonic, her book Custom Knits is coming out soon, and it looks very much her aesthetic, kind of simple but kind of sexy, very cute patterns in that. I did get a copy of Creepy Cute Crochet, which I was telling Aaron about, which I was really excited about. I thought it was going to be really cute. And I have to say I was a little disappointed in it in that it's just very simple construction. All the little dolls in the book are the same construction, where it's essentially just a sphere on top of a sphere, and then they're kind of accessorized differently. And that the author had these little kind of 50s sci-fi ray guns up on the counter where she was signing the books.
Which is great.
They are awesome. Really cool. And I was all excited. And then I realized when I got home and I went through the book that they're not in the book. So then I was kind of bummed because I wanted to make my ray gun. But on the other hand, because who doesn't need a crocheted ray gun?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I'll say I looked at the book and I thought, oh, well, these are kind of the same pattern over and over again. And I left it on my dining room table, and my 10-year-old wandered by and he picked it up and he started going through it, and he said, he was looking at the book, he said, will you teach me how to crochet? And I said, sure, because he wants to make like everything in the book. And he,
oh.
So maybe that's sort of, I'm missing the point, like it's not really for someone like me who maybe wants something that's a little more variety. Yeah, or something a little more interesting, or I guess, I don't know why I'm asking for challenge in crochet since I'm already pretty challenged by crochet. But yeah, some more variety, I guess, in the construction. But for, it might be the perfect book for, you know, a 12-year-old or a 14-year-old who's interested in doing some amigurumi and might find some other patterns too complex, that these are a little more simplified.
Yeah.
And that might be the right audience for it.
Awesome. So you were really nice and brought me a shawl pin.
Oh, I forgot to talk about the shawl pins.
Shawl pins. Annie Adams does Peter and Sterling shawl pins, buttons and jewelry and really, really pretty necklaces that hold stitch markers.
Mm-hmm.
They're gorgeous. And Jessica brought me one.
I did. Yay. There's an event at TNNA called Sample It, where you get to go in, and not all the vendors do it, just some of them do it, and they'll have one or two items that are available at wholesale pricing, and which I always find so funny because, you know, everything's available at wholesale pricing at TNNA, but, you know, you have to, like, do an opening order, and some of these companies, you know, opening order might be 500 or 1,000 or 2,000, and so this is a chance to just get a single item from a particular vendor, and the idea, I think, is, you know, that you'll try it out and see how you like it and then come back and place an order. But honestly, I think most everyone uses it as personal shopping night, and everyone's running and getting themselves a new Namaste handbag. Oh, Namaste has a new bag out, the Newport tote. That's sort of an east-west shallow tote style that, and the new seasonal color, the lime is gone. The lime was last season's color. The new seasonal color is peacock. And I think that definitely was a trend, that kind of peacock, rich teal color.
I think I need that.
Yeah, I think you'll like that.
Because I have a gray one, I think I need a colored one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but everyone at the show went in and bought themselves like a new Namaste bag at the Sample It event. And, you know, you do get a chance sometimes for some of the companies, you can buy just a few skeins of yarn as a chance to take it and try it out. It's also ridiculous how much yarn people just stuff in your hands and say, oh, here, take it and try it. And I've actually like found myself refusing yarn, saying, no, that's okay. No, I don't, because you can only take so much stuff home. There was a woman coming home on my shuttle bus who literally had two full-size shopping bags just full of yarn that people said, oh, here, try some of this. And as you get closer to the end of the show, too, the vendors don't want to have to pack everything up and take it home. So they get a lot more generous, and they start filling your bags up with stuff. So I had to kind of bend people off, and people keep trying to shove stuff in your bag.
Not good for those of you who are stash busting.
No.
Sure.
I know. I was thinking about that. I'm doing the Stash and Burn, June stash busting, and I came home and I'm looking at all the yarn that I brought home. I didn't bring that much home, but Sheep Shop was very nice, and they gave me a sample skein of the Sheep 1, 2, and 3. And so I brought all that home with me, and I've already used one of them, like I said. And then Polar Knit, which is a Canadian company that's making very bulky weight yarn that's made from Polar Tech fleece. And they gave me a sample to take home, and you know, and so I ended up with all this yarn that I didn't even intend to get, and so I'm looking at it and going, well, now I'm like totally sunk for the stash busting thing. But I have a plan for that. I have one yarn in my stash that I've decided is like so not worthy of being in the stash. I don't even think anyone else will want it. It's just it's actually, I'm gonna compost it. I'm gonna put it in the garden because it's cotton and wool, and I'm like, hey, it'll decompose naturally, yeah. And it's gonna go in the yard and become part of the sheet mulching project. So it's going in the yard. So that's gonna be like a quick way to get rid of about 1,000 yards right there. Boom. So even if I don't, I know.
Is that cheating?
I don't think no. De-stashing counts for that. If you sell your yarn or
so
give it away.
Composting your yarn counts.
Yeah. It's a de-stash. Okay. It's a way to de-stash. If it was any good and I would think anyone would enjoy it, I would certainly sell it or give it away. But it's cruddy. I did a really bad job dyeing it, and it got all like crusty and crunchy, and and then I just put it away. I know.
That's so apt.
I know. Doesn't it sound great? And it's just gross. And I don't know, somewhere in the back of my mind, like, I kept thinking, I'm going to salvage it. I'm going to re-dye it. I'm going to over, and it's cotton wool. So I searched for, like, the longest time, like, because you need a union dye to do a cotton wool blend, blah, 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 blah. And the only thing I could come up with was Rit dye. And I keep thinking, oh, I'm going to dye it. I'm going to dye it. But I'm not going to dye it. I've had a bottle of Rit dye for like 4 years. I'm never going to dye it. Yeah. And it's time to just let it go because compost it's not it. Like I don't have enough yarn.
Well, I wanted to talk about Patron Farms that we got in.
Yes.
It's a new sock yarn for us at the store. I don't know how new it is. But it's Merino Bamboo Superwash. And it's gorgeous.
It is really beautiful.
And it's 450 yards. And I think it retails at 17?
Something like that.
1750. So it's really good yardage. And it's kind of shiny and kind of, I don't know, muted colors.
Yeah, a little watercolor tone too. I think that's the bamboo, since the bamboo dyes really differently than the wool.
Yeah.
So you
but it's really pretty. So if you have a chance to look at that anywhere in your area, you should definitely do so.
Yeah, and the yarn is called, it's called Yukon.
Oh, yeah.
The bamboo. Because they do a number of different yarns. I think they do ones that are all wool. And I know they do one that is a cashmere wool blend for sock yarn. I know, we were supposed to get a sample of that, but it didn't come in the shipment, so I'll have to call and ask. I went by and introduced myself at the show just to let her know that we're carrying her yarn now. Yeah, so she does lots of really beautiful yarns.
Ew, I would look forward to getting cashmere sock yarn. So we talked a little bit about what we're knitting for the shop, but maybe, Jessica, you could talk more about how you go about choosing the list for us,
because
Jessica goes through, she makes up a list for all the people who work this shop, and then we each choose something when we need something new to work on.
Right. Well, different yarn shops deal with this differently. Our shop, I know a lot of shops sometimes will solicit their customers. Sometimes, like, customers will knit a sample and it'll hang in the shop for a certain period of time, and then the customer will get to keep it, or different things like that. At our shop, we just have our staff knit during quieter time, and fortunately we have a number of people on the staff who knit like demons and get a lot done. I had some ladies from another shop I was having dinner with, and they said, well, how many of your yarns in your shop do you have samples knit from? And I thought about it and I said, all of them. All of them except maybe like three. Like when we got in Dream in Color Smushy, I could see people sort of starting to lean toward the basket, and I said, nobody knits a sample from that. We're selling every last skein. We're not knitting a sample. You know, just let it, leave it alone. But pretty much everything else we have in the shop, we have a sample, and sometimes a sample can be a small project like a baby sweater or a hat, a scarf. But we do try to do a lot of adult-sized sweaters also, and blankets and all sorts of things. So I think from talking to people at the show, I think we're an unusual shop in that we have an awful lot of samples knit up. So what I do, the first time we go through, we want to make sure that we do have a sample of everything in the shop. A long time ago when we first opened, sometimes that just meant knitting a swatch, and I know for a lot of yarn shops that means knitting a swatch. But now we really want to have a garment, an item, something that people can really appreciate, like a sock for all the sock yarns.
They make really nice displays, too.
Yeah.
And I know when we had our big anniversary sale, that is when we sell a lot of the samples
for yarns that
either we're not carrying anymore or actually discontinued.
Mm-hmm. So basically, at this point, though, we have a sample knit for pretty much every yarn. So now I'm going through, that was something else also from TNNA I really wanted to talk about. Huge thing at TNNA this year is independent pattern designers. There are a couple of things you probably have already heard about from reading blogs that are coming up. Twist Collective is a group of designers. The creative director is Kate Gilbert, and she's working with, I'm going to get her name wrong, Julia Farwell Clay, who's from Moth Heaven blog. There are a few other people working on it as well. I don't want to say it's just them, but I can't remember right now. And they are putting together what will be like a free online knitting magazine, kind of like Knitty, except the patterns will be downloadable for a fee. So you'll get content, you'll get articles, but then if you want to knit a particular pattern, you're going to download that. And then the idea is that a large part of that download fee is going to go directly to the designer. I think a lot of designers. I was just talking to Evelyn Clark the other day, and so I hear a lot about what happens on the design side of things. I think everyone has this fantasy, like, I'm going to be a knitting designer and it's going to be so great. But unfortunately, the industry is not very kind to designers. They don't have very much control over what they do. They don't have very much control over the yarn that ends up being used for a project. They don't have control over where their pattern ends up. Like, they might sell a pattern to be in a magazine, and then it ends up being like a free pattern on the website, and then they're no longer able to earn money off of that. They can't then sell it to, or include it in a book or whatever they might want to do with it. It just sort of ends up out there somewhere and without enough compensation for them. I mean, really, knitting designers work at slave wages. They barely receive compensation for what they do.
Well, so it sounds like this is kind of like a co-op magazine.
It is. Yeah.
And that's going to be really great for designers.
So Twist is going to, who else is involved in it? Marnie McLean is involved in it. Veronique Avery. Cookie A, she's got a sweater that's going to be in there.
Ooh.
I got to peek at the book. And so there's, all sorts of really beautiful patterns by incredible designers, well-established designers, and it looks just beautiful, really professionally put together. There's also Stitch Cooperative that Shannon Oakey has been organizing, and that is for independent pattern designers who might not have enough of a collection to warrant, say, getting their own booth and doing their own marketing and, to establish their own accounts. So they get
Which is expensive.
It is very expensive. And especially if you're selling patterns, because, if you're selling a pattern at a wholesale price, you're maybe selling that pattern to a vendor for $2.50 or $3 for the pattern. And they only need so many patterns. And so it's very hard to get by as a designer. And so with Stitch Co-op, it's all under one roof. And they've got Stephanie Jappel, Annie Modizit, Shannon, I'm already forgetting other designers who are involved in this. I apologize. But so you're able to write as a shop, you're able to write a single order and get patterns from all of these
different designers. That's really cool.
Yeah. And then there's a couple of subscription services that are popping up. I didn't talk to these people at the show, but it's, everything I'm reading is follow-up. Patternfish is one that people are interested in, where it sounds like it's a subscription service. And then they have a set of designs that are downloadable once you are a subscriber. And Louette also, they're not an independent designer, but Louette Company has now a subscription service for individuals or for shops where you pay a set fee, and then you can download as many of their patterns as you want off their website. And for the shops, it's like it's a set fee, and you can make copies and distribute them at will to your customers. You can sell them or give them away for free or whatever you want to do with it. So a lot, people are really trying to delve into how can we deal with digital pattern distribution. But there were a lot of independent pattern designers I saw at the show. Like I was saying, Chrissy Gardner, I met a really nice woman from Wisconsin who has a line called Black Pearl that were some really beautiful designs. Cookie A was there selling her patterns. Bon Marie Burns from Chic Knits, this was her first TNNA. So tons and tons of independent pattern designers. It's really kind of, I think, it's their time. I think people are beginning to appreciate what goes into designing a pattern, and they're starting to get somewhat just compensation for their work.
That's good. It's good for everyone.
Oh, but we were talking about shop models.
Yeah.
Like 20 minutes ago when I started talking, we were talking about shop models. But anyway, so at this point now, we're starting to focus on the patterns. When we were at TNNA in January, I bought a line of patterns called Style Hound, which is all doggy sweaters because they're really cute. Our shop is located next to a dog grooming store, so we get a lot of requests for dog sweaters. But the patterns just sat there after TNNA, and there wasn't a lot of interest, so one of the women who works at the shop just over the weekend knit up this little doggy sweater, and then it's been like crazy all week. Everyone's talking about the dog sweater, everyone's buying the pattern, everyone's getting yarn for it. It's just, the power of a knitted sample is really cannot be underestimated, the difference between seeing a picture in a book and seeing the live sweater there. It's really
effective. I think it's like ordering yarn online, and then you get it home, and you're like, these colors don't match. It doesn't look as soft. Like, all that stuff that happens where you're a little bit disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
But what are you going to do? Every website has a note saying colors of your monitor may not match.
And, exactly.
All that stuff. So it's really good to see something in person knit up.
Yep.
Yeah. So I haven't been knitting as much as I was before because I've been feeling so much better. Mm. But I read Summer by Edith Wharton.
You mean you haven't been reading as much?
Yeah. Before? What did I say?
You said knitting.
Oh, I haven't been reading as much because I've been knitting more.
There we go.
That's what I was trying to say. So I read Summer by Edith Wharton, which was okay.
Oh, okay.
It's supposed to be this sexual awakening kind of thing with this young girl. And I just was really pissed off that there are two horrible guys in it.
Oh.
And she was kind of stupid.
Oh, yeah. I've never read it.
Okay. Well, I read Remains of the Day, which I really liked by Kazuo Ishiguro?
Dudo.
Sorry.
No. Dudo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I watched the movie, too. So, but I really liked the book.
I have not yet read any of his books. I've been meaning to read Never Let Me Go for a very long time, but it's, yeah, I've been bad on my reading.
And then I read Ahab's Wife by Sina Jeter Naslund. It's also The Stargazer. Mm-hmm. I think it's the secondary title, which was totally good.
What's that one about?
And I really liked it. It's the point of view. The whole story is about Ahab's wife. And it's her story from when she was a young girl till she became Ahab's widow, if you all know the story of Moby Dick.
Yeah. It doesn't end well for Ahab.
Yeah, so it's like autobiographical.
Okay.
And it's really interesting. It's well written. There are a couple of things that I felt were way too modern to be in it. Like one of her friends has a child out of wedlock, and the town it takes place on Nantucket part of it. And they look askance at it, but I didn't feel like she was as outcast as she would have been in the actual period.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a couple things that are kind of iffy for me. And I'm not really into tales of the sea and, you know, sailing and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really interesting.
Okay.
And it's pretty long, 500 or 600 pages. But it went by really fast.
Wow.
So, okay. And I wanted to keep reading it.
Oh, that's great.
So
I've been a slacker. I've hardly been reading anything. But after our last recording, I went home and Wes had pulled a whole stack of books out, like all the books that he meant to read in high school and college that he never did, that were sitting on his nightstand.
Mm-hmm.
And Howard Zinn was right there on the top of the pile. And since we'd just been talking about it, and I realized I haven't read it since I was in college. So I pulled it out and started reading it again. And I'm like, I love these people so much. But yeah. I'd only read like 10 pages of it. I have not been making time for myself for reading. But I did watch a good movie while I was gone.
Oh, yeah?
It's a movie called Soldier's Girl, and it is the story of a soldier who, it's based on a true story, who falls in love with a transgender nightclub singer, and, well, it's not giving anything away. He was bludgeoned to death by another soldier because of this relationship. But the reason I was really interested in seeing, I mean, I'd heard it was a good movie when it came out several years ago. But my interest in seeing it was that Lee Pace, who stars in Pushing Daisies, is Calpurnia,
the singer. Oh!
And it is, it's an amazing performance. I mean, he's incredible in this role. I mean,
I'm going to have to see that.
Even though I knew he was the female character, I kind of kept staring going, is that really him? Is that really, because he just so wholly embodies this character, and it's a really incredible performance. But it's one of those movies, it was kind of reminded me, it's like watching something like Boys Don't Cry, where
you know something bad is going to happen.
You know the road you're headed down, you know how the story's going to end, and you don't want to see it happen. But it's still, just for his performance alone, I felt like it was really worth seeing.
I have to see that.
It's just kind of incredible.
Noah and I went and saw it. The Indiana Jones movie last week.
And how was it?
It had its moments.
Uh-huh.
Overall mediocre. I'm glad we went to a matinee.
Uh-huh.
And I love Cate Blanchett.
I was gonna say, you and she have the same bangs.
Yeah. I have to bite my wobble use because she's Russian.
There you go.
And I was really glad that, I can't remember the woman from
Karen Allen.
Yeah. That she was back in it.
She's a knitter.
Oh, she is?
She is. She's a knit designer.
She was featured
in a Vogue knitting like 4 or 5 years ago. She does these machine knit, like super intensely patterned, like intarsia stuff. But yeah, she's a knit designer.
Wow.
I'm sorry, totally. But they'll always tie it all back to knitting. There we go.
So it was okay. It had its moments. And I really don't understand, you know, George Lucas and Steven Spielberg were working together on this. And I don't understand how they thought that this whole there's a big supernatural bent to the whole movie, that how that was going to pan out for Indiana Jones, like how that works. Because they've all been, remember watching the first ones when I was a kid, and they all had these kind of weird, slightly paranormal things going on, but this was just way over the top. And I don't understand how that came from them.
I don't know. Well, Wes saw it without me. Yeah, we were somewhere apart, and he had free time to go see it and said, do you mind if I see this without you? And I'm like, oh, honey, have at it. By all means, help yourself. And he was really anxious to see it because he loves, especially the original, loves the original film.
Yeah.
But he even said, basically when you have Spielberg and Lucas together, you have every possible resource of Hollywood at your fingertips, and this was all they came up with.
Yeah.
So he really felt like they could have pushed a little harder and gotten to something a little bit better.
So the young kid,
Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah. For example, there's a scene where he gets like thrown out of this Jeep and he lands in these trees with all these monkeys and he starts swinging through the trees like Tarzan. It's the cheesiest thing ever.
Yeah.
And like becomes part of the monkeys or something. I don't know what was going on. How did they think that was? I don't know. I did not get that. No one and I were laughing. And there were little kids there that I'm sure, younger kids that probably liked that thing. Mm-hmm. But my point of view is really liking the old ones. This was a cut far below.
Too bad.
Disappointing. But
I think that's going to wrap things up for us for this week. We've talked and talked.
Yeah.
And so we'll be back next time talking about holiday knitting. And
that'd be me.
That'd be Erin, the planner in the group.
Yes.
Yes. And so until next time. We'll see ya.
Bye.